This Steve Jones Show podcast is now loading. The Steve Jones Show podcast is presented by Sunbury Motor Company, Purdy Insurance, Brewers Outlet, and NIL Game Changers. Bringing you an in-depth look at Penn State sports and more, this is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. The Steve Jones Show is presented by Brewers Outlet, NIL Game Changers, Sunbury Motor Company, and Purdy Insurance. Now, from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Sunbury Motor Studio mobile today in Minneapolis after Penn State beat Michigan last night, 66-57. Penn State gets Indiana tonight at 9, 8:30 the airtime from the Target Center. This half hour brought to you by NIL Game Changers. Get your career or business rolling by making that call or getting in line to NILGameChangers.org. And we're in the Sunbury Motors studio. Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf, and online at sunburymotors.com. All right. It looks like they are close, by the way, to finalizing the college football playoff structure. The Big 12 and the ACC are on board with it. I am in Minneapolis, which is normally where Neil is. I don't know where he is now. But, sir, welcome. It is always a pleasure. Appreciate it, because we're going to turn this one into Thursday with Neil.
As always, it's a pleasure to be here, and oddly enough, I am smack dab in the middle of ACC country here in Charlotte, North Carolina. how's Minneapolis doing? I'm bummed I couldn't be there to get out and go to dinner or something.
Yeah, exactly. I already had Murray's picked out, as a matter of fact. I did.
That's it.
Oh, no. You're running with me, pal. I know where to go.
You should have told me this years ago then. I'm glad the Big Ten is completely out of whack and crazy about where everybody is.
Oh, man, it's not going to be here next year, but still. But it's great to have you on board. There's a lot to talk about, a lot of ground to cover. So let's start with the Steelers go out and get Russell Wilson. Now, he's going to get about $37, $38 million for the Broncos and so forth. So this is a filings bargain basement deal by NFL standards. But what about from football standards? What do you think?
The football standards, you're getting a bargain for sure, but maybe this is just me. I don't want a bargain at the quarterback position of the NFL. And I would also say this. Let's wait until the contract details are revealed. I don't think it's straight up league minimum. You wouldn't do that for a starting quarterback. You've got to give them something to reach up to. I think, you know, some incentives or something like that. But bottom line, you're probably going to get better quarterback play for less money even than a third-year guy on a rookie contract. So right there, you have to kind of say it's a win. I don't know how significant of a move it is. And a lot of people are touting it as such. In one way of thinking, and I'm taking the opportunity to make a cheap joke, it's you got, for a team that needed to sign a veteran backup quarterback, now you have two of them. So yeah, this works out well in that regard. But I think reasonably, you can expect Wilson to probably perform a little bit better overall than Kenny Pickett did. But for me, I think really the addition here is by subtraction. I think it's an actual NFL-level offensive coordinator who can set up a structure in which a quarterback can have some success. Now, is he going to be an all-pro? Probably not. But you make a big addition at your coordinator spot, and maybe maybe not a gigantic, but something of an improvement at your quarterback, you're going to have a better offense. The details come with that, and that's a benefit for the Steelers because the strength of their offense, if they have had any, has been outside of their coordinator and their quarterback. So there's still an off season to go. You've still got a draft. They're probably going to make some moves in terms of, you know, the second wave of free agency. But they're a better team now than they were, and I really think that that overall is what they needed to do right away here.
What does it say about what they think about Kenny Pickett?
Honestly, I don't know, because you can't get away from the fact that Wilson's contract is uncomparable. You know, there are not guys brought in to even have a whiff of a starting job, barring injuries, playing for the minimum. You know, I'll admit this on the air. I grossly overestimated what the market was for Mason Rudolph. Mason Rudolph's getting five times what Russell Wilson is.
I know.
And Rudolph signing in Tennessee, he's probably not going to start. You know, you've got a pretty reasonable assurance that's going to happen. Mitch Trubisky signed for more money than both of them. And in my opinion, Mitch Trubisky was the worst player in the NFL last season to start two or more games. So it's a weird market, but really the anomaly here is Wilson's contract. So that kind of speaks to everything. He obviously is in a very different situation. But strategically, what you have with the Steelers is we'll take a shot on a guy that we think has some game left. And if he does, if he performs well in 2024, he's healthy, we have faith in him, you can sign him to a three-year deal. Give him market value, say $40 million per. That's a three-year contract, $120 million. And functionally, you have a fourth year that he just played. So you got a quarterback for $121 million over 4 years. He's your starter in that time. That's going to look like a bargain by year three. It'll be a bargain by year three. So and I'm obviously making up numbers just to draw out the point that it's a creative way and kind of a you know, exploiting a market inefficiency in finding a starting quarterback. And with that, I don't think any of it has anything to do with Kenny Pickett other than the fact that this is cheap. This is a better option for what we can see right now. He's still there if this doesn't work. And I know it looks weird, but for where they were, I think it's a reasonable risk to have taken on for where they are as a team, for where they're trying to go, and for what we've seen of Pickett to this point. Might hurt some feelings, but at the end of the day, you've got to take a shot at a proven commodity in the league if you think that that player still has something left in the tank. And that really is the big question here.
The Broncos did go through that five-game winning streak mid-season, in which they beat four playoff teams, including the Super Bowl champion Kansas City Chiefs. I realize different system, different personnel, but is there something out of how Wilson played that we can take from that?
From what I saw, the biggest issue that Wilson had was more, it's not as obvious. Because you look at his numbers, it looked like if they were 11-5, you think he's a pretty good player.
Right.
It goes to show how dishonest stats can be for a quarterback, because the main issue with Wilson, he had gaps. He missed stuff.
Right.
When Peyton's melting down on the sideline, it's usually because a culmination of several missed opportunities. And from my vantage point, it looked like he missed a lot in early down that put him behind the chain. They didn't want him to have to do as much as he would have to do, pushing the ball down the field on third and nine, because he missed an open look on first and 10. And Wilson, to me, that speaks to the awareness of what's going on around him, the ability to see the field. At the same time, though, what I also have seen is Ryan Tannehill, who had similar issues in his career early on, play at nearly a Pro Bowl level under Arthur Smith, because Arthur Smith gave him very makeable stuff. He put weapons around him to dominate the short space around the line of scrimmage, down the seam a little bit. In other words, he utilized tight ends and running backs. That sets Wilson into, I think, where he is in his career. He can still throw the ball down the field, but they're going to need to possess the ball much better. They're going to need to get ahead of the chains for the sake of a running game that they want to utilize. It's a good pairing in that regard. And I think because of that, these were things that absolutely Sean Payton is not asking the quarterback to do. Sean Payton has a pretty strict high-to-low read, multi-level type of offense. Wilson's probably not the best guy for that, but Sean Payton didn't bring Russell Wilson in. So you can see why that divorce happened the way that it did. But I think from a rebound perspective, Wilson has the ability to succeed under Arthur Smith, whereas he really didn't with Peyton. And Peyton seemed to know that by the end and led to some issues, and now they're paying him $85 million not to play for them over the next 2 years.
Is Deontay Johnson going to where you are, Charlotte, Carolina, addition by subtraction?
Absolutely. I mean, we talked about this when it happened. I said, I think this is probably fatal. You can't keep this guy. And the reality is, nobody really seemed to want to talk about this, but he held out. I know that it's not going to be called that because he physically showed up, as if there's a legal definition of what a holdout is. He demanded more money in his contract, and he was not going to practice in training camp until he got it. The Steelers gave it to him in a real, basically a two-year front-loaded type of deal that became upside down. In other words, his salary is lower than his cap hit for this season. That means extend or trade. And I think the team said, okay, look, you're exploiting this. You probably shouldn't, but you're exploiting this. We're going to be in a situation after the next two seasons where we're going to be able to revisit this, and we're good with that. We'll give you more money if you are. And what Johnson did this past season, while you will never hear me say that Deontay Johnson's not a good football player, he's a very good receiver. He's done a lot of good, and he should be paid at the higher level. But for what he did in terms of the optics, in terms of leadership, I'm not paying a guy that much money. I'm not paying a guy even second-tier market for a wide receiver if that's what he's going to put on film. I don't care what the other stuff he did. I can't win with a guy like that. And more than anything, that's the basis of the Steelers' decision to trade him. They didn't get value on that trade. They got rid of a contract that they don't want to have to pay because they don't want a guy like that in the locker room around their team. My guess is it will also necessitate the signing of a veteran receiver. I think a guy, ironically, like Tyler Boyd, who, when he was on the Bengals, was calling out the Steelers for things like that. At around the salary level that Johnson was going to be this season, makes a lot of sense for them. I would not be at all surprised to see if that's the direction they're going to go. But they're going to want to bring in a higher target, veteran leader type of receiver. And for me, Boyd fits that very well. We'll see what they end up doing, but at the end of the day, I hope Johnson doesn't do things like that regularly. I hope he doesn't do it for the Panthers. This is a bad look overall, and I still feel like that leaves a bad taste in people's mouths, even to this day. And it's too bad. His career shouldn't be remembered for that, but it was his action.
Neil, to me, they go out and they did something that really took me aback, and I mean took me aback in a positive way. The signing of Patrick Queen at linebacker, because I realize linebacker like running back is more of a, quote, devalued position, but I look at a player like Queen, I think he's terrific. What did you think of the signing?
I'll say this. I enjoyed bagging on Patrick Queen as a Raven. More than anything, I really took exception to the constant, obvious, and false comparison between him and Ray Lewis when he was coming into the draft, because everyone knew Baltimore was going to draft him. Ray Lewis went in the 20s. This guy went in the 20s to the Ravens. Therefore, he's Ray Lewis. Like, whoa. Okay. No, he's not. He had that temperament. He played in purple and black. Sure. He's not even close to Ray Lewis. And I know who knows that. It's the Baltimore Ravens. They traded for Roquan Smith. They gave Roquan Smith the green dot. And they gave Roquan Smith the extension. And now they let Queen walk. So I think he's a solid player, for sure. There are good things that he does. I'm not sure what their defensive game plan was in the playoffs when they had Queen covering Travis Kelce, who was leaving tire tracks all over him for most of that game. And I guess, to an extent, it's good to see Queen get up and continue to talk to Kelce as if he just did something on the play. At the same time, though, all jokes aside, here's the bottom line. The Steelers have not had that pod boss type at the middle, at the inside linebacker position in a very, very long time. The position has been, in a way, cursed since Ryan Shazier went down. A busted high draft pick that they gave up multiple assets for, and everyone else either grossly underperformed or got injured. They have not been able to fill that. And I think with that, that almost puts the premium on there to pay Queen to come in, probably to play all three downs. Whether he'll be the green dot guy, I depends on a lot of things. Cole Holcomb's return, I think, is one of them. But they need somebody that's going to play 17 games. And I'm not saying that it's anybody's fault that they didn't. It's just they've had a tremendously long run of bad luck. And Queen is the latest iteration in that, but it's also the biggest investment that they've made financially in one, and at a position of absolute dire need. I mean, we could make a pretty good 11-item listicle on inside linebackers who have started for the Steelers over the last 7 years that you've never heard of. There's a bunch of them, and to be able to get away from that, to try to do something to get away from that, they absolutely needed to do it. And I didn't think that they would, but good on them for that. It was money that they needed to spend. I think it'll it's hard not to find an upgrade from where they were at inside linebacker at the end of last season, but he's experienced. He's a good athlete. He's explosive. I think he can play that the weak side position within the defense they've been running. And there's value there for sure.
And I think you know what my next question is going to be, because we talk about this all the time. Going through the free agent cycle, maybe picking up a veteran wide receiver somewhere. But how does this now, in your opinion, set up the draft based on how they handle free agency?
You know, one thing with Omar Khan, what we've seen, he loves to hit the nail square on the head. And I don't mean necessarily success versus failure. I mean, they know they have a need. They're going to go fill that need to what they feel, filling it is, which gives them options in the draft. They picked up a veteran cornerback, Dante Jackson. I'm not sure if he is somebody that they're expecting to perform at the same type of level as Deontay Johnson, but it was a position they needed to fill. That gives them options. They don't have to invest in another premium cornerback, but they could if they wanted to. You know, you have to like what you have with Joey Porter coming out this past season. Putting all that together, I think long-term, they still are going to need a cornerback if they can get off the cycle of free agent signings of inside linebackers and cornerbacks and invest in those positions and develop some people, they'll be better off defensively. They're going to need another wide receiver along with the veteran signing. I think that has to be a position that you prioritize. And they're going to need to add depth along their offensive line. And this is a franchise that has relied pretty heavily on developing them from the middle to late rounds. You know, Chuck Okorafor was a third-round draft pick, I think, largely based on potential. I know Steelers fans don't like this, but I would imagine Dan Moore is going to start another year just due to what they have available and his price tag. But he's, you know, in a very similar position to Okorafor. He can get benched by a rookie mid-season if the rookie is ready to go. So offensive tackle looks like a position they might want to prioritize. In this free agency period, we saw guards explode in terms of value. So buying one in free agency isn't the easiest thing to do anymore. But for me, overall, they need a center. And they let the centers go in free agency. They kicked the tires on a few of them who all else signed elsewhere. I think there are two centers you could get and reasonably justify a top 40 pick on. Would not surprise me if that's the direction they're looking for round one. They have to get a day one guy who starts immediately. I think that's what they're going to do.
Might I recommend Zach Frazier from West Virginia?
He's my guy. I don't want to go on the record of saying that now, but if they stay where they are and they get Frazier, where I think is reasonable value, some might say is a little bit high, I don't care. They need to have a starting center to make their guards better. They have not done much of that recently. So Frazier, to me, is an A1 prospect. He's a high-level guy. Great athleticism. He's got the size that you want. Maybe not, you know, he's not Maurkice Pouncey big, so people aren't saying, you know, draft him in the top 15, but you can justify 20 overall on him. I think he would come in and make a difference right away.
Yeah, I mean, obviously I watched a lot of video of West Virginia before last year's game, then did the West Virginia game. I walked out thinking, guy can play. Neil, I know you took some time. I appreciate it so much. Enjoy the warmer weather there as compared to the cooling weather here in Minneapolis.
Yeah, you missed the tail end of it being nice. It's like 75 and sunny here, absolutely gorgeous. But as always, thanks for having me. We'll meet up again next week.
Thanks, Neil. Appreciate you. And we'll come back. We have Dave Spadaro coming up as well, right, Todd?
Yep, next segment.
Sound so excited about it.
I got there. I had to make sure my microphone was on.
Here on News Radio 1070 WKOK, brought to you in part by NIL Game Changers.
There's something to be said about a sale with a handshake. A service technician who really knows what he's doing, they can explain it in English what the problem is. There's nothing better than having that friend you could trust in the area. That's Sunbury Motors, where you get selection, knowledgeable salespeople, and prices that fit your budget, and more important, that friend you can trust. Welcome to Sunbury Motors, Kia, Ford, and Hyundai. You could chop other dealers and compare prices, but at Sunbury Motors, you get their lowest price promise. They research the current used vehicle market and guarantee their used car prices are the lowest. If you find a lower price, Sunbury Motors will beat it. Three dealers all in one. See their full new and pre-owned inventory at sunburymotors.com. Pick out a vehicle you like and schedule your test drive online. Follow them on Facebook. Sunbury Motors Ford and Hyundai, North 4th Street, Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf.
You want a unique way to display your brand. You need a team of seasoned experts to work with. You want to reach customers who buy. You want NIL Game Changers, a versatile consulting agency powered by former student athletes and coaches who work as NIL sports agents. NIL Game Changers will help you build powerful relationships with customers through compelling stories, with student athlete influencers as your leading edge. Finally, we'll equip you with the right media to drive your success home. NILGameChangers.org, building meaningful relationships with your customers.